Hey, Woman of Strength, this is Megan, your host here at the VBAC Link. We know that planning your VBAC can be full of surprises, but what diapers you choose for your VBAC baby shouldn't be one of them. That's why our team loves Coterie. Their diapers are made with clean and sustainable ingredients, something we know that is important to our community. And the best part is they hold up to 16 ounces of liquid for up to 12 hours of leak protection. Try them today and get 20% off your first order of $40 or more with code VBAC20 at checkout. That is VBAC20 at checkout. Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com. Hello, Women of Strength. We have a CBAC after two cesarean story coming your way today. This is a story that we felt that we should share because it is so important to document our CBAC stories as well. And even though there's a lot of things that are going to unfold within our guest Chrissy's story, it's so important to see how much she has grown and healed over each experience. And listening to her, a few things came up in my mind as I was listening, and it was intuition. We've said it for years, honestly, since 2018 when this podcast began. Intuition is so powerful, and sometimes it's hard to tune into and understand what your intuition is or what fear is, but I challenge you right now to start tuning into that. When you're getting the feelings, is it your intuition? Really, really, really connect with that intuition because it is so powerful. Another thing that I felt like was a big takeaway from her story was how much she researched and gained knowledge in her own rights and her own ability to say no or to say not now, not yet, no thank you. Women of Strength, I know it's hard and it's really hard when we're in labor. I know it. But you always have the right to say no. You can always say no. And Chrissy really did such a good job at researching and educating herself and arming herself up with the knowledge that she needed to so she could confidently say no when she needed to, but also confidently say, hey, this is something that needs to change and stand up for herself in that time. We do have a review of the week, so I want to jump into this and then turn the time over to Chrissy. Okay, this reviewer is H Seller. H Seller, I think is how it is, says life changing. I don't even know where to begin. This podcast has honestly been life changing. I am currently 9 months postpartum after my first cesarean birth, and I have already binged every episode. I honestly believe the VBAC link should be a resource for every birthing person, not just VBAC, on how to prevent a cesarean to begin with. This needs to be part of basic birth education. Oh girl, I am with you on this. I am with you on this. Says, I share this podcast and the blog with everyone, every friend of mine that is expecting because I wish I would have known about it before my first birth. Listening to the podcast reminds me that I am not alone in my experiences and that this is possible and to have an amazing, empowering birth is possible. Julie and Megan deliver facts, stories, inspiration, in such a wonderful way, hearing their voices when an episode comes on puts me in a happy place. My husband and I have already been talking about baby number two. I can't wait to share my next birth story because with an education and support I now have, I know I will be in a beautiful healing regardless. It will be beautiful and healing regardless of the outcome. Thank you so much, Hustler or H Seller, so much for your review. You guys, these reviews really do mean so much. It is now 2025 and we do need updated reviews. So you never know, it may be read on the next podcast. We're switching things up this year with educational pieces and topics of reviews and things like that. So you never know, but please, please, please leave us a review. It means the world to us. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, you guys, I'm seriously so excited. It's always so fun to have multiple people on the show and co-hosts, but it's also really fun to have doulas sharing the story or listening to the story with their clients and giving their tidbits. So, Chrissy, I'm going to turn the time over to you. And then, of course, Sarah will be hearing from you, I'm sure, along the way as well.
All right. Hi, I'm Chrissy. I live in Greenville, South Carolina, and I'm going to tell you about my three birth stories. So all VBACs and repeat cesareans stories start with your first C-section. And Julian was our first C-section. He was conceived during my husband and I's 4th month of dating. My husband and I both kind of knew marriage and kids were our desire with each other almost instantly, but it was still kind of crazy to think about how fast it happened. Everything was going fine until about 30 weeks when I started to be measuring about a week behind and was scheduled for a growth scan, which we couldn't get into until about 32 weeks. During that scan, it was confirmed that Julian was measuring close to the lower 10th percentile and that I from that point would be scheduled for regular non-stress tests every week for the rest of the pregnancy. His check at 36 weeks was non-reactive, which is not what they like to see, so I was sent for a biophysical profile, which he was graded so low that I was told to immediately go to labor and delivery and not eat or drink anything, which as a nurse, I know that means they're assuming I may have surgery in the very near future. I was planning to go to work right from my original appointment, so I reported to work, but then went right upstairs and burst into tears of fear. I was given fluid and he woke up because of the scare. But because of the scare, I was scheduled for an induction at 39 weeks. And because I didn't know any better, I was just excited to meet him a week early. On the day of my induction, I showed up bright and early, ready to get things going. I had done no preparation, assuming that my high pain tolerance and grit would serve me well. I wasn't against pain medication, but I was ready to test my limits. Julian passed the non-stress test, so they started Pitocin, and he was doing fine, so they decided to insert a Foley bulb to speed things up. When they inserted it, my water broke, so that kind of put me on the clock. Once I got to about 4 centimeters, 12 hours later, I was somehow feeling discouraged and tired and asked for the epidural. My husband said as he was holding my hunched over body that a huge teardrop fell out of my eye as the needle went in and the zing sensation went down my leg. I was already giving up, but had no idea what I was setting myself up for. Over the next 4 hours, Julian's heart rate would drop with every contraction while Pitocin was going. They would turn it off and he would be fine. And then when they restarted it, he would have the non-reassuring heart tones again. I was not explained to why I needed to wear oxygen or keep flipping from side to side or what low heart tones meant. All I know is that at 1 a.m., they called for a C-section because we were getting close to the 24-hour rupture of membranes. If I had known then what I have learned since then, I would have tried to steer my birth in so many different directions. Unfortunately, birthing people are not given this kind of information up front, which is why I think the VBAC link is so important for any pregnant person, as it could potentially help 1 in 3 women who end up consenting to a C-section to this day. I was devastated. I never thought the dramatic push and bringing baby to my chest at long last was something that wouldn't happen for me, let alone I would mourn missing out on it. I was wheeled into the OR. My arms were strapped down to either side of me. My arms were shaking and pulling uncontrollably to the point that when my Julian was given to me, I was too scared to hold him, thinking I would drop him since my arms felt like jello. I've since learned that because my epidural was converted for the C-section, that I would feel extremely unpleasant sensations of my innards being pushed and pulled out of my body. All I could think about was my dad saying, "It was the happiest day of my life when you were born." And somehow, this was feeling like one of the worst days of my life. I felt double loss. It took me a long time to get over feeling like a sham for not giving birth the real way, but on the table, they said, "We gave you a double stitch so you can be back the next time." And over the next 5.5 years, that became an overwhelming objective and purpose in my life. When Julian turned 1, I had my IUD removed. I still had not gotten my period back, but was hopeful it would return soon, since I had started to wean him from breastfeeding. When it did return, it was not normal. I would be spotting for weeks afterward and had a strange, dull pain on and off constantly. I was so desperate to get pregnant so that I could get my V back, thinking that all the horrible feelings I was having would go away, or so I thought. After what felt like the longest 4 months ever, I did conceive our daughter, Ellie. It was January 2020. To this day, there are so many songs, books, kids' shows that I cannot watch because they remind me of the early days of the pandemic. My son and I both got flu A and flu B during the first 3 months of the year, and it was terrifying to be relieved by a positive flu test. As an ER nurse, I was put on furlough since no one was coming into the ER, and many of us were sent to New York City and hard-hit areas to help where help was needed. I had to tell my manager earlier than I would have liked that I was pregnant and scared to be around some of the symptomatic COVID patients because we did not know what would happen. Sometime in the spring, when people couldn't stand quarantine anymore and were going out and socializing again, the patients in the ER spiked, and I went back to work at 6 months pregnant. Even though it was terrifying, I was glad to be out of the house, with somewhere to go and have a purpose. Those winter and spring months were some of the most depressing and hardest to get through in my life up to that point. I spent a lot of the time doing all the things that you can do to achieve a VBAC. I took a mindful birthing course over Zoom because they weren't doing any in-person things at that point. Read several books, did spinning babies exercises, I hired a doula, etc. The thought of finally getting my VBAC was at times my only motivator to get up and do the things some days other than the bare minimum to keep my 1-year-old and me alive, as horrible as that sounds. When I reached 37 weeks, I went into quarantine and the waiting game began. I walked miles and miles, practiced mindfulness techniques to get through the pain. I was scared that the epidural had led to my son being in distress. So by this point, Ellie had passed all the extra growth scans. She was head down. Everything looked perfect. By 40 weeks and 5 days, I became extremely stressed out. I had an induction scheduled for 41 and 3 days. That was making me so nervous. My husband and I attempted to speed things up, breaking my water in the process. As soon as I felt the gush of fluid, I felt my heart sink and was overcome with fear and regret. It was starting just like the first birth I did, with the premature rupture of membranes and what I believed would be an inevitable cascade of interventions, which would lead to a repeat C-section. The rupture occurred around 3 p.m., and I decided I should try to rest and wait for things to ramp up. By 10 p.m., things were regular but not painful. I decided to try and go to sleep, but because of my trauma from the first birth, I wanted to make sure that she wasn't having issues with deceleration, so I got my stethoscope out and listened to her heart rate, as I had done several times before that point. It sounded normal, and I listened to it through a few contractions. Every time I could hear her heart rate slow very noticeably. I didn't know what to do. I didn't want to go to the hospital because I knew what they would say. I didn't want to tell my husband because I knew he would want me to go to the hospital. But I was genuinely concerned for her. So I let my husband listen, and he started getting dressed immediately to go, and I knew it was over. When you arrive at L&D, they ask for a reason for you being there. As a nurse, I knew what I was about to say was going to sound insane, but I said, "I think my baby is having distress. I heard her decelerations on my stethoscope at home." I could see the amusement in the triage nurse's eyes as I said this, but she said, "Okay, let's get you hooked up and see what's going on." Sure enough, she was already having category 2 decelerations, and I was only 1 centimeter dilated. The resident said that my contractions were only about 5 minutes apart, but that because of the decelerations, she would be admitting me right away. She said we could try fluids and some position changes, but it was looking like the C-section was going to be the only safe way to get her out since I was so far from 10 centimeters. Before she left the room, she said, "I know this is going to be very disappointing for you since you wanted to VBAC, but you may have saved your baby's life by coming in when you did. It's amazing that you knew to listen and could interpret what you heard." Long story short, nothing worked, and I was prepped for the C-section. My COVID test was negative, so my husband was going to be allowed to come into the OR. Tears were streaming down my face the whole way. I walked into the OR and sat myself on the table for the epidural. I was still in the clothes I had walked in wearing. That's how fast things were going. The epidural was placed and they started prepping me. After a few minutes, they had still had the fetal monitor attached for some reason, and we heard her heart drop into the 70s and not come back up. I could hear the sense of urgency on the other side of the drape, and suddenly I felt several sharp pricks across my abdomen. I was laying there with so many thoughts running through my head, but thankfully one of those thoughts was, "Huh, I wonder why they just poked me like that. Oh, I guess they're checking to see if I was numb." "Wait, I felt that," I yelled. "Wait, I felt that." And they were like, "What? Was it dull or sharp?" I yelled it was sharp. They poked me again and again, and I kept saying it's sharp. We could all hear her heart rate in the background getting slower and slower, and I yelled, "Just put me out, just put me out." The pre-oxygenation mask went right onto my face, and the last thing I heard before I went out was someone paged the STAB team, which is the group of medical providers they call when they're assuming that a newborn is not going to be doing well.
Wow.
I woke up in a daze. When I realized where I was and what had happened, I burst into tears again and asked, "Is she okay?" And she was perfect. They actually said she was screaming before they even pulled her out of me fully. Very strong and healthy baby Ellie. But another day that was supposed to be the happiest day of my life, which instead was a day even worse than my first birth. I felt completely defeated, hating myself for all the time, effort, money, worry, hope, and mind space that I had put into something that I still didn't get. A few minutes after I woke up, the surgeon came up to me and said, "Your original scar did not heal right. It was defective. And because of the urgency of the situation, we had to cut through a higher area of your uterus so we wouldn't accidentally cut any arteries because the anatomy was obscured by the first scar. We realized while repairing the uterus that it was in the contractile tissue and you will never be allowed to be back again," which I didn't really care because I thought we were done having kids, or so I thought. But it made me feel really bad about myself hearing the words defective, obscure anatomy, and not allowed hung with me for a long time. I wanted to get out of that hospital as soon as I could. All I could think about was my failure and how all the feelings that were supposed to be fixed by this birth were only made worse. At my follow-up appointments, the 6-week check and the 12-week for IUD insertion, I had to actually be let out the back door both times so that the people in the waiting room wouldn't see me hysterically crying. I honestly didn't even want to go to these follow-up appointments because they just further cemented to me that I had failed. And I'm not someone who can be told that I can't. And even though I was for sure believing we were done having kids, I joined the special scars group on Facebook just to see if anyone had had a similar scar as mine. I didn't think we would have more kids, but I still wanted to know if I could. Unfortunately, over the past few years, I've only spoken with one other woman who had a similar scar as mine, and the fact that it was so uncommon made me hate it even more, because I couldn't find any answers about what it meant for me. I did seek counseling following these events, and eventually I felt better, but I still thought about what happened daily and could not stand to hear anything related to birth.
Taking a quick break to continue our earlier conversation about the importance of the right prenatals for pregnancy and beyond. As I mentioned, my favorite brand is Needed. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally intensive times for a woman's life. You don't have to feel so terribly nauseated or so depleted in the postpartum stage. A prenatal multi that optimally nourishes you can make all the difference between just getting by during and after pregnancy and feeling your very best. Let's not just survive, we definitely need and deserve to thrive. Needed is clinically backed, third-party tested, and formulated the best, in my opinion, prenatal vitamins. They took so much time to learn about women and why we are getting the bare minimum nutrients, and then designed the supplements that addresses women's needs at every stage of pregnancy and beyond. Needed's prenatals are filled with the optimal amount for both you and your baby and include important ingredients such as choline, folate, vitamin D, and more. Enjoy 20% off at thisisneeded.com with code VBAC20. That is thisisneeded.com and use code VBAC20. Back to today's episode.
Several months later, I started having pelvic pains. I went to be evaluated for an ovarian cyst, but when they didn't find one, they did see how crazy my first scar had healed. Because of the pain, they had agreed to do an exploratory laparotomy surgery to repair the scar, thinking it could be the source of my pain and definitely a reason for the spotting I'd had between cycles. During the surgery, they found a large surgical hernia as well that they had to remove momentum from and recommended surgery to fix it in the future. Whatever the reason for the pain was, the scar or the hernia, my pain was gone following the surgery. And 2 weeks later, we moved to Greenville, South Carolina. Everything seemed fine. Trying to settle into a new house that needs lots of fixing up with a 1 and a 3-year-old takes time. I knew I didn't have an IUD in at that time, but my period hadn't come back yet since my 1-year-old would not take to the weaning and I was still nursing her. So I wasn't that worried. In August, my period did come back, and I decided to use ovulation strips to see how long after ovulating I was spotting for, to see if I could figure out if my cycles were in the normal range again. Strangely, the first strip showed up very dark along with the next several strips. I tried, and I was like, oh great, things are out of whack still. But that's when I remember people sometimes interpreting ovulation strips for pregnancy, since LH and HCG are such similar shaped molecules. I decided to use one of the pregnancy strips that comes with the ovulation pack, and sure enough, it was also darkly positive. I was inexplicably excited, and I sheepishly told my husband, who was also very excited. We went to our 8-week appointment, and there was nothing on the ultrasound. My HCG was high, but the progesterone was low, and they called it a blighted ovum. I eventually did pass whatever was in there. This left my husband and I with a new resolve to have a third child and cross the bridge of a third C-section when we got there. I started listening to the VBAC link again, something I had to erase from my memory in the past, as it was another reminder of my failure to VBAC and not getting to submit my story of healing and success. There was an episode I got to where I really liked what one of the guests was saying. She was a doula named Sarah, and believe it or not, she was based out of Greenville. I knew that if we conceived again, she would be my doula. A year later, after a chemical pregnancy and a loss at 10 weeks, we conceived our second daughter, Leah. I had established care with the midwifery practice for the first few months until they saw my surgical records and transferred me to the OB practice across the street. Additionally, because I was 37 years old at this point, I was sent to maternal fetal medicine for my 20-week anatomy scan to double check that everything was looking normal, which it was. At my first appointment with the OB group, the doctor sat down across from me and said, "Well, your anatomy scan looks great. We will also do a gross scan at 32 weeks and 36 weeks because of your previous history of IUGR." And I said, "Sure, that's fine." He went on to say, "So you understand why the midwives transferred your care to us and that you're not allowed to have a vaginal birth, right?" By this point, I'd done some research on my birthrights, special scars, and hospital regulations and answered calmly, "Actually, you can't tell me I'm not allowed to let something happen on its own. You're not allowed to force me to have a surgery that I do not consent to." He responded, "Well, I'm not sure anyone in this practice or any practice would be comfortable allowing you to VBAC." And I said, "Well, I'm not comfortable just going straight for a C-section at 36 weeks and not at least seeing how things go." I left the appointment pretty upset and even more determined to decide my own fate. As the appointments went by, each OB would say, "You understand that we would like you to schedule a C-section." And I said, "Yes, but I'm not ready to make that decision yet. I'm still doing my research." What I have found is that the highest estimated rate of rupture after classical scar is around 15%, but other studies estimate it to be much lower. Additionally, some studies don't distinguish between true rupture and dehiscence. Furthermore, most ruptures are not catastrophic, meaning loss of life, permanent disability, hysterectomy, and so on. Only about 2% of ruptures end this way, and they're often caught through monitoring or other symptoms before they can progress to anything beyond the risks of a typical C-section. Having done this research on my own, I became more confident in my decision to continue on the path of letting my body decide what it was going to do. Sarah, my doula, gave me more confidence. I had told her everything that had happened in my past, and she said I had valid feelings, thoughts, and had made logical decisions based on my research. She sent me along her usual workbooks and resources for creating a birth plan, birthing positions, pain management, spinning babies, tea, dates, etc. I told her I appreciate it, but I'm not going to do those things. I had done all those things and more, and that had ended up being one of the hardest parts of my first repeat C-section, having realized it made no difference at all. The last thing I wanted to do was spend time trying to be mindful and stretching instead of being mindful with my kids and family who were already there. This ended up being a decision I was very thankful to have made, and Sarah was on board and fully understood my reasoning. Weeks went by. At every appointment, the OB would say, "It looks like you've been counseled on this before, and there's no need to go over everything again. Are you ready to schedule your C-section yet?" And I would say, "No, not yet." Looking back, they really didn't go over anything with me. All they said was because of my special scar and lower segment surgery, I was too high risk and not allowed to VBAC. I had done my own research, and there's no actual numbers on a high transverse scar, which is just above the lower segment in the upper segment, or on the lower segment scar resection, which is what they classified my surgery as. I feel it's important to get these numbers as C-section rates continue to rise. More kinds of special scars will occur, and more people could possibly end up with scar revision surgeries before they're done growing their family. At my 37-week appointment, with some encouragement from Sarah, I finally got an OB that would talk to me about my options. She said, "I know we can't make you have surgery that you don't want. You're right, you're in a gray area. We don't really know the numbers for your kind of situation. I think it's reasonable for you to see what happens. If you show up in labor, we will admit you." And I was overcome with relief. Finally, someone was being honest with me. She knew I had done all my research and was overly informed of my rights. I told her that I just didn't want to be harassed or threatened if I came in, because that would discourage me from coming in when I would have liked to, which is right when labor started. She said I could come in as soon as I thought anything was going on, and I would be treated with respect. Circling back to what I learned about EMTALA, the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, it basically says if a hospital wants to receive reimbursement from Medicare patients, They may not turn away anyone seeking treatment, regardless of their citizenship, legal status, or ability to pay. If a pregnant person arrives in active labor, they must be treated until the delivery is complete or a qualified medical personnel identifies that she's experiencing false labor. Furthermore, the person in labor can only be transferred if there's a hospital that can offer a higher level of care. The hospital I was going to was equipped to deliver VBAC and had a NICU, so I knew they were equipped to handle uterine ruptures, which they do about once a month, I've learned. I did agree to schedule a repeat C-section at 40 days and 4 weeks. At 40 weeks and 1 day, I got anxious and tried a half of dose of what's recommended for kickstarting things with castor oil, and it definitely kickstarted some things. And within about 6 hours, I was having contractions every 4 minutes. About 2 hours later, I was getting anxious to go to the hospital because they just didn't feel right. I felt them from my belly button down, and they didn't feel the same way I remembered with the Pitocin. They weren't really crampy. They're more burning and sharp. I suddenly started feeling an urgency to get to the hospital so they could do the C-section. I texted Sarah to say, "We're going, but don't worry about coming just yet." My answer for why I had come to the L&D department was painful contractions. I already couldn't talk through them. I was hooked up to the monitors, and we could see that Leo was already having Cat 2, borderline Cat 3 decelerations. And it's determined by how much the heart rate drops as a percentage of the baseline heart rate when not in a contraction. So we tried some position changes, but I had already felt at peace with the idea of going back for a C-section, and my intuition told me it was time. I was extremely nervous to be strapped down, shaking uncontrollably, and not being able to enjoy my baby again. To my surprise, the spinal worked amazingly. I was calm, my husband was next to me, and I got to make all the decisions. I didn't feel pulling or pressure or tugging at all. It was the first time that I got to cry tears of joy after seeing my baby for the first time. I was informed that I'd had a small rupture, and I had a very thin lower segment-like tissue about halfway up my uterus, which is not normal. I ruptured. It wasn't a big deal. We caught it. I knew something was wrong, and I had made the decisions that healed me, and I got my baby here safely. After my second was born, I remember sadly walking around our neighborhood, lost in the thought that I'd met all the important people in my life already, and something was not sitting right with that. Never would I have ever imagined that a third C-section would heal everything. What I want people to take from my story is that you have to accept that you might not get your VBAC and work that into the process of attempting a VBAC. Can't put all your eggs in one basket for working towards that VBAC and ignoring the basket that needs some attention in case it doesn't happen. Making your own decisions and being confident in your reasoning makes all the difference. Yes, I did have a third C-section, but I know there's nothing I could have possibly done any differently that would have changed the outcome. I encourage people to do their own research, not just on rupture rates, but on birth rights and patient rights. You cannot let your provider decide for you what they think is best for most patients, because you are an individual and sometimes there isn't a perfect box to put you in. Your fate should not be determined by a doctor wanting to check a certain box and use that to make decisions that make themselves feel comfortable. Of course, ideally you can find a supportive provider, but if you cannot, that does not mean that you can't call all the shots. You may rupture, but it's not always, in fact, not usually, some dramatic event. My most dramatic birth was before my special scar and surgery. So keep an open mind, use the knowledge that you gain to instill confidence in yourself. Not getting your VBAC is a disappointment, but if you go in with the right mindset, it can be beautiful. And meeting my third daughter was finally the happiest day of my life.
Oh my goodness. I love hearing that. Like when you, like that whole end, like I just closed my eyes and can hear you speak. And I was like, yes, like all of these things are so true. And I love that you point out, like, yes, you had a third C-section. Was it what you wanted in the beginning? Would you have wanted a vaginal birth? I'm sure you did, but like, This is what felt right, and you followed your intuition yet again. I feel like along the story, but all stories, it was like intuition, intuition, intuition. And then hearing that you can have a healing experience, I think that is so important to point out that it can be healing. It can be absolutely healing. And I love that it was for you. And I love that you were able to have your husband there and look back and be like, no, I'm amazing. And you should be really proud of all the work you did, all the research you did, advocating for yourself. It's not very easy to advocate for yourself. And I love the message that you gave to the other women of strength. Like, learn and advocate for yourself, know the patient rights.
Yeah, I think that's what was so unique and so awesome about your story, Chrissy, because you, even from like us starting to work together from the beginning, like you just knew what you wanted and you weren't afraid to say that. And you told me kind of like, hey, look, like this is fine. Like you said, like I gave you my packet and all of my welcome stuff for my normal clients. And you were like, look, I've done this before and I know exactly what I want and I know how I want to go forward with this birth. And you were just, you know, so empowered and confident on your own. And I was just so excited to be along with you. And obviously, like every birth doula wants to be there for the physical birth, but we also have to listen to our clients and respect their choices and decisions. You know, when you were like, hey, we're going to the hospital, but like, don't come yet. It's hard to hear that. Like, if you're like, okay, like, you know, but like you knew exactly like where you stood and what you wanted. And, you know, I think that's just really awesome and amazing to have clients like you that are totally aware of, like Megan was saying, like your intuition and how you were feeling. So, you know, I think you have such an empowering story, and our stories can really go a long way, and you're going to be that voice for people that are feeling so similar.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's hard to hear sometimes because you're like, that sounds so amazing. I would want to do that, but I can't. I think that's how a lot of people think. Like, oh, that's good. She must have a strong personality. Like, you don't have to have a strong personality to stand up and advocate for yourself in a lot of ways. Like, I think a lot of it stemmed from you being informed along the way. Like, you were informed. You knew your rights. You knew the evidence along things. I mean, here you are, like, talking about them. And that's super important. It comes down with that education because I do feel like the education is what helps us feel empowered enough to stand up and say what we do and don't want.
Yeah, and I really don't have a strong personality at all. I was always like very intimidated, trying to like put myself up for the next week of whatever week it was visiting the OB practice. Like, oh God, who am I going to see today? But, you know, I just approached it with full knowledge of everything that's out there, as far as I know, because I've been researching it for long time, and just knowing my rights, I guess, like I know that they know what they can and can't do to me, or, you know, you can't force someone to have surgery if they're not ready for it, and C-section is a major surgery. So I just knew to stand my ground in a polite and respectful way. And eventually, at the end of the wire, someone, you know, stood up for me in the practice, and I was very grateful for her because she gave me the last final push I needed to just wait for things to happen.
Well, you should be so proud of yourself, and I'm so happy for you. And how was this postpartum? How's it been?
It's been like nothing. I mean, I
Really?
have a third newborn, but I don't, for some reason with me, like subsequent C-sections, the debilitating pain is not there from what I experienced with the first one. I don't know if like there's just so many nerve endings that are not there anymore, or I don't know why. It's been super busy, so I don't like even have time to think about what could have been, or you know, any like feeling thoughts about how I wish I could be feeling differently. But yeah, very busy with the third, and just so happy to have her with us today.
Well, I'm so happy for you. Congratulations. And I'm glad that even though you maybe didn't have Sarah during your birth, that you had her along the way, because I truly do feel like having that sounding board and that doula and that support along pregnancy can really impact and motivate people to learn how to trust that intuition and learn what they need to do and what's right for them.
Yes, and she's actually helped me since birth because she didn't really, I didn't ask her to come during it. She has come and hung out with my kids and me so I could do certain like errands or tasks. And our kids are actually obsessed with each other now, so it's kind of nice.
Yeah, we kind of, bonded even more postpartum, and now our daughters are movie night buddies, and they all like to play
Oh,
together.
that is so fun. I love hearing that. That is something that I tell my clients when they hire me. I'm like, hey, listen, you do not have to be my best friend, but I want you to know that I'm your lifelong friend. And I feel like that just right there sums it up. Like, really, like, no, not everybody's going to be having their kids play together, but I love that relationships can form and create in this manner.
Yeah,
Definitely.
yeah.
Okay, you two. Well, thank you again so much for being with us today.
Thanks for picking my story.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to the vbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to the vbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hey, everybody, I just wanted to take a quick sec to thank you all so much for listening to today's episode. We are so glad that you are here. This community is near and dear to our heart. We love you all so much. If you enjoyed today's episode, we would really appreciate it if you'd leave us a rating and review. Our whole team here at the VBAC Link actually gets to see these reviews come in, and it makes our day. A 5-star rating helps us share our podcast and gets these important messages out there. Thank you so much for listening, and we cannot wait to see you next time.